This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, welcome as we continue hour number three here on your Wednesday. We got John Clay coming up from the Lexington Herald Leader. He'll join us at 40 past the hour, and we will talk to him about not only Kentucky football, which is playing outstanding with their quarterback, Will Levis, but also the SEC in general. Tennessee is good. Arkansas is ranked. Ole Miss is ranked. We know about Georgia, and we know about Alabama. We'll get his thoughts on that conference as we are heading into week five in college football. So the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Kansas City Chiefs were scheduled to have a game on Sunday night at Raymond James Stadium, and it is still scheduled to happen at that stadium, although now the NFL is looking into different places. So we see Super Bowl rematches all the time, right? It's just the nature of the sport. Eventually, you will play at some point a team that you met in the Super Bowl. It's just the way it is. However, we have never before in the history of the NFL seen a Super Bowl rematch that took place in the exact stadium in which that Super Bowl was played. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers becoming the first team to host a game at their home stadium and winning that game. The Rams were the second. Now, I had to look at the Rams' schedule, and they'll play the Cincinnati Bengals in 2023, but that game is going to be on the road. Now, whatever future opponent they're going to get because of the 17-game schedule, and you also, you know, you get another opponent added, we don't know if the Bengals will be on that list and be having that game at SoFi Stadium. So if that game on Sunday night is being played at Raymond James Stadium, we'll actually see a little bit of history. Again, a Super Bowl rematch that took place in the exact stadium in which that their Super Bowl meeting took place, but if it is somewhere else, we will still go without that little stat. Now, I'm just here to point out that this is one of the reasons you should continue to listen to this show. Worthless things like that you can use to impress your friends. So there you go. Take that with you and use it at your next party. It'll be fun. Maybe you'll get some attention. Maybe somebody will be so impressed that they'll ask your fantasy football picks or what betting angles that you've got for this weekend's college and pro football games. Maybe you'll just become, again, the center of the party. Again, use that little tidbit maybe this weekend. You might actually, you'll get something out of it. But other than that, it's pretty useless. We'll talk NFL coming up next. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're tracking Hurricane Ian. We have a good friend, Pat Donovan at WDAE in Tampa. Comes on the show a lot. We wish him and his family all the best and everybody in that area. It is looking pretty bad. I'm trying to keep it on just to keep monitoring it, but I don't want to get too distracted because I can get swept up in this kind of stuff.
Oh, easily.
You know, I had no interest in being a weather guy. Like, I always wanted to do this for a living, but those weather guys, man, you ever been around a weather meteorologist? They are, the skills they have are intense. They're really good. Some of them are, look, don't get me wrong. Like, Al Roker is like a guy that reads the weather on TV. Like, you know, Willard Scott
back in the day.
Yeah, those guys. Like, they had somebody go, here, do these. But if you've ever been around a TV studio and been with real meteorologists. Like,
if you hang out with Jim Cantore.
Yeah, Jim Cantore. These guys know the weather. They know what they're watching. They know the, you know, stuff like that. It's an amazing science. It's an incredible science.
Are you saying they know what a storm thinks?
Love that. That is on, you got me going. I'm sorry. You opened it up. It's your fault, by the way. It's your fault. Every time she says that in that movie, I laugh out loud. To boy, my wife has to punch me in the arm because she loves that movie. And when it's on, she's like, come down and watch Twister with me. I go, again? She goes, I love Twister. She loves all the disaster movies.
You ever stop her and go, what scene are we on?
Yeah, I know. I go, well, where are we?
Oh, I don't need to see that part.
Is Meg feeding him the beef? I'll come down.
Bird.
Bird. Bird. We require such. Oh, God, I don't even get into this. You mean to tell me Billy knows what a storm is thinking? God, such a crazy movie. Do you think they look back and laugh at that, or do you think they look back and go, that was a great piece of art we made? Not obviously the lead actor.
Oh, it's a fantastic.
He's,
I mean, the movie.
Dead, but
the movie is perfect.
You think Helen Hunt goes, no, I'd do it. I would do it all over again the exact same way.
No.
Or do you think she's like,
no, you don't. See, that's the problem, right? You don't want to mess with perfection.
No, it's perfect. It's so good. Philip Seymour Hoffman, when he became like a real serious actor, I thought they plucked him from the Oklahoma storm chasing crew. And we're like, hey, kid, you want to act in a movie about storm chasers? And he's like, yeah, just be yourself. We'll give you some lines. Just be yourself. Because when he became a serious actor, I'm like, that's Dusty?
That's the same guy?
That's the same guy? That guy who's winning the Academy Award was that guy in Twister? Like, he played that character so well. It was perfect.
Well, that just shows you the talent. Because my other, sorry to get on a Philip Seymour Hoffman rant. One of my favorite characters he ever did, and it was a small, small role, was the role of the writer in Almost Famous.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, yeah.
He was fantastic.
Uh-huh.
He's
a great actor.
Yeah.
He was a great actor.
But that's why I don't think, I would want to remake this movie. Make another Storm Chaser movie, that's fine.
Fine.
But don't
touch this.
Don't touch one. Yeah.
So anyway, if you're, Jim Cantore, God love him, man. God love him. He's the only, look, he must have a terrible social life, because if you're with him, like, something's coming. Stay away from him.
Oh, my God.
You know, because where he goes.
Now, when I was younger, and you would see hurricanes, like, you know, I remember it was like, I guess it would, I have to go all the way back to Hurricane Andrew was the first time where, you know, go all the way back to where it was like, you know, these weathermen are right in the thick of it. I always thought that would have been cool.
Philip on Twitter, I met Helen Hunt while they were filming that here in northern Oklahoma. She was an absolute beep. Love the movie, but meeting her in middle school ruined my image of her. Oh, that's too bad. I hate that.
Yeah.
I hate that because you want to be like, I heard that a number of people. So that's
maybe
too bad.
Maybe she's just, you know, was in her character.
Yeah,
she was a method actor.
I hope Jamie Gertz would have been nice if you had met her, because she got. Her character got completely hosed in that movie.
I mean, he should have
100%.
It sounds to me Philip should have sought out Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, that's
he just
right.
wouldn't know who that guy was
exactly.
Because that guy wasn't anything important yet.
That's very true. Now, Jamie Gertz's character in Twister got just run over, just absolutely run over, because the only reason she was there was they just needed to get a piece of paper signed.
Yep,
that was it. Get in, get it signed, out of there.
And get
and
married.
Then she's like, he's like, come with me. And she's like, okay, look, we'll get Joe to sign this and we're out. And then we're going to get married. Awesome. Awesome. And she wants to sign it. So it will be no problem. And then what happens to her? She gets caught up with the storm chasers. Bill doesn't even go in the car with her. He goes with his ex-girlfriend. She's got to ride with Dusty.
Ex-wife. Even worse.
She's got to ride with Dusty and hear them talk about how much they love each other over a walkie-talkie. Like she did nothing wrong. And she just ends up at the end going, I got screwed. I got screwed over.
But I will
met the
say
man
this
of my dreams.
For her, though.
I
by
wanted
the,
to-
by the time that tornado hit that small town with the drive-in.
Yeah.
You know, she seemed pretty okay with tornadoes at that point.
She was kind of like, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm done with this. No more.
I'm assuming, I'm assuming she moved to like Washington.
Yeah.
You know, just far away from wherever a tornado could ever possibly be.
Exactly. So we love, by the way, if you're new to the show, we get on these Twister rants. I don't know why we do. I don't know why we get on Twister. Of all the disaster movies that are out there, we tend to linger on Twister more than any of them.
I think it's just because it's the cast of characters, you know, more so because, you know, when you talk other movies, like, you know, we talk about Day After Tomorrow, Armageddon, or
yeah, we'll
Dante's
talk about a few
Peak.
Other ones.
You know, they're all fun, but it's just the cast of characters that are there. And the whole premise that, you know, Carrie L's character is the, you know, is supposed to be the bad guy throughout
the entire
movie. He's supposed
to be the bad guy.
And you ruined it for me. And
I
that's
know
why
I
always go back now, because I always think about that. It's like, why is he bad?
Well, if you're new to the show, my premise with Twister is that they needed a villain, so they created a villain. But what was the villain trying to do? Was he trying to stop technology?
Was he stealing it?
Yeah, was he trying to steal it? Was he trying to stop it so that he could control tornadoes? Was he trying to create a machine that was going to make more tornadoes and destroy the world? No. What he was doing was he was trying to get the exact same information to build the exact same warning system, but he had corporate sponsors and he wasn't running it in a beat up old truck.
Yeah.
That was the only difference between those two teams is one of them was backed by a corporation, so they had all the latest gizmos. The other one was in beat-up trucks using maps instead of GPS systems, and they were both after the same goal, create an emergency system to give people more warning in tornadoes.
We'll say this. Maybe the evil part of it all is that he might have been the only one that was trying to, you know, or he might have stolen the idea. Because I think all three of them, sounded like all three of them worked in the same lab, and then he was like, well, let me take this over to here, you guys.
Yep.
And, you know, then the quintessential line, he's in it for the money, not the science.
Exactly. And that was his biggest crime.
And like you pointed out, if he's able to detect a tornado and give you 15 minutes more of a head start, does it matter how much money he makes?
Doesn't matter. If I'm on a farm in Oklahoma and I can get to my shelter in 15 minutes rather than 5, and he's making $1 billion, I couldn't care less. Ain't my money.
Yep.
Right? I will be happy to send my family into the shelter. So, by the way, Philip responded, met everyone else. They were awesome. Bill Paxton talked to us and was really cool. That's cool. That's great.
Maybe Helen Hunt was just having a bad day. Give her a break, Philip.
Maybe so. Maybe she was not feeling good, or maybe she didn't really want to be there. I don't know. But I don't know. She guesses she should have.
Maybe she knew
nice.
That she was going to be thought of only in this movie for the rest of her life.
Exactly.
So. Although she did do something great with the. Can't think of what was the TV show she was.
Oh, Mad About You. Mad About You. So.
And she's done other things.
She has. Thursday night football coming up tomorrow night. It is Miami against Cincinnati. Cincinnati got their act together now. Are we going with the Bengals?
All right, here's the deal, right? What are you going to be watching this game for?
Tua Tagovailoa.
I'm going to be watching it for that. And Cincinnati's wearing their white helmets.
Oh, that's right.
It might be a geeky thing, or maybe, you know, I don't know what phrase you want to put up. I'm kind of excited to see this.
You know what? That actually, they look pretty nice.
They do.
By the way, what took so long? Don't they have white Bengal tigers?
Yes.
Why did it take this long for them to get that sort of?
Because I think it's the NFL.
The NFL just
said
no?
Had to wait and see, like, okay, how can we make some money off of this?
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, the Saints are also doing it this weekend, too. They're wearing all black helmets.
Is that's the game in London?
Yeah. It's all black. It's all black. The helmet is completely black except for the fleur de lis.
Oh, I got you. Okay. That's nice.
So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of alternate helmets being used this season, which is pretty fun.
Well, I'm glad, too, because remember they stopped that because of the helmet?
Yep.
The helmet rules, so they stopped doing that, and they finally went, no, I think we can find a way to make this work.
White Bengals helmet, I mean, I think
it looks great.
That's gonna be fun.
It looks great.
And then there's a football game.
Somebody did point out on Twitter that because the Bengals offensive line is so bad that Joe Burrow's white uniform is going to be grass stained very quickly, you're going to be able to see the damage that is being done. that's not going to look good when the announcers Kirk Herbstreit and Al Michaels are like, "He looks awful green." That's been the story of the night.
Is that the color it's supposed to be, Al?
They get to Burrow again. So I don't know. Where's that game being played? Cincinnati.
I would imagine. We would have heard about it.
Use real grass,
right?
Or do they use that turf?
Well, that's the other petition. I've heard saw that too. That they're trying to petition that everybody needs to use grass. Change all the fields to grass.
Well,
now.
Did you see Sterling Shepard?
Dude, that is the scariest thing.
What in the world happens to these guys?
It was like a sniper hit him or something.
I know.
He's just running.
It's happening way too much. Like, you're seeing videos now where a guy is running a route and he just falls, and then that's it. Didn't it happen to Odell Beckham in the Super Bowl where nobody hit him and he went down?
Yep.
Nobody hit him, right? If I remember correctly, I think he went down with a non-contact injury in the Super Bowl.
I mean, that one, like, if you're cutting, I can understand. Like if you're cutting on the turf,
sure,
cutting
you,
on the grass,
you can cut
I get
on
it,
grass anywhere, right?
You know, maybe your cleat gets in there. Sterling Shepard bothers me because all he was doing was just running down the field.
Running down the field, and then next thing you know, he just catches.
I'm thinking it wasn't on that play, that there had to have been a play before that just kind of
exacerbated
it.
Yeah. Because you're right. It is the weirdest thing to see a guy jog, run, pop down, grabs his leg, screaming, bringing out the stretcher. It's like, I mean, seriously, it's a weird thing to see because, you know, we're kind of accustomed to seeing a hit, a bend in the wrong direction, and then we go, yikes. But when you see a player running and then just snap, that's it, they fall down.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking because it's not something you can point to as it's not like you're right. Maybe it happened on, he got hit and it got loosened up. But when you watch it, you get the feeling like there's nothing to, what's the blame here? Is it the turf? What is the deal?
But I think that's part of the thing that people are pointing their finger at is that, you know, the turf, there isn't as much give with the turf as there is with grass. We see grass all the time. You can see that you can make a divot.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
that's
so right. I mean, the grass will tear and give up. The turf doesn't. Doesn't give as much, and they put the tire pellets down there, and it's supposed to cushion and save things. And I will say this: I mean, definitely the turf nowadays is 100% better than the turf back in the day when they just put a green plastic thing over concrete.
Concrete, and that was it.
Oh yikes. God, it still gives me the chills thinking about it.
I know it's one of those things where I think about landing on that on a frozen day and I just cringe. All right, we'll come back. It's more Wake Up Call. Again on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Glad to hear from you. And also, again, don't forget, we'll talk some SEC football coming up at 40 past the hour. John Clay is going to join us from the Lexington Herald Leader. The Wildcats of Kentucky are off to a 4-0 start, but we'll also talk about some other teams in the SEC as well as we continue with Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, John Clay's going to join us from Lexington. Kentucky is fantastic, and they're getting Chris Rodriguez back. The offensive line isn't even playing that well, and yet Will Levis is emerging as he's one of the quarterback classes of 2022. C.J. Stroud is one of them, obviously, but Will Levis is one as well. It has been a wild ride for Will Levis in his popularity that is growing in Lexington, Kentucky. Right, John Calipari was right. Kentucky's a basketball school. It's always going to be a basketball school. But Will Levis has emerged as as a mega celebrity in that area. His NIL deals are crazy good. He's got Kentucky ranked in the top 10. And Mark Stoops, their coach, is up for every job that is out there, every job, as if the Kentucky job is never going to be quite good enough. And I agree. I agree with that a little bit. I think that if you're building the Kentucky football program, it's got to be a little daunting to see how much emphasis is on basketball, even though football, when it's good, Kentucky's no different than any other place in the country. If you're at a top 10 team that's winning and exciting, everyone's going to come. Everyone's coming. Nobody is turning down tickets to Kentucky football because the basketball team is right around the corner, right? They'll enjoy both. But it must be difficult to be in a situation where you catch lightning in a bottle, things are going your way, and it's still people are very, very curious about what recruit is coming in for basketball, what John Calipari's practice facility is going to look like when it's refurbished or whatever it may be. It's when you could be a candidate for a job at like Nebraska that's on the downward spiral, but you can help bring that up again if you can get the same resources that you had, you know, during the Kentucky reign. And we know that in Nebraska that they are going to have a mega facility that's going to be opened up, $125 million practice facility and complex that's going to be opening up soon. So any coach that goes to Nebraska is going to have the tools to recruit well and put out a good program if they can absolutely do that. But Mark Stoops has done a great job. But I feel like every single opening that has been out there, his name gets bantied about. Because Kentucky's always been one of those teams that are good but not good enough, right? They're always like, all right, they're good. Then they'll lose a couple games and sort of disappear. But at the same time, he is showing that he can be a coach at a major level in a major conference. But we'll talk about some of the other teams in the SEC, including Tennessee. They're off to a 4-0 start. Ole Miss, they are also unbeaten. Of course, Alabama and Georgia. Although Georgia got a little bit of not a scare. I never want to say scare because that implies that the game was really, really tight. But Kent State put some points on them. But I think there's also a thought process of, When you play these games, and sometimes for the team that's playing you, they're obviously going to play up, and then you can check out a little bit, and you don't. That happens to some teams, and then you got to realize, oh my goodness, let's get rid of this team, and you sort of pull away. But we'll talk to John Clay about that. We're following the hurricane. We don't have get as far as sports goes. We have yet to get any other cancellations or rescheduling of games. We're still waiting on the NFL to figure out. That might take a while, but how long can you take? I think if you're the NFL, you can throw a game together anywhere in the country pretty quickly, but there is some logistics that you have to have in place. You don't just stick two teams in a stadium. You do have to make sure that there is going to be some, you have to have some elements within the game operations. You have to make sure that, there are going to be official statisticians for the game, not only just officials on the field, but officials running the clock at the game. You got to have every home team supplies a certain amount of personnel to the game. And so the NFL throwing a game really quick somewhere else, well, you got to also make sure that there's everybody down the list that's got to be there to make sure that they are there. So at some point, they're going to have to make a quick decision. I've been following this hurricane, and Ron, I'll tell you, Twitter has been a great tool for this. The PD is... The Tampa PD showed a picture of one of the areas in Tampa where the water has receded way back, which means the hurricane has been sucking up the water, and I don't even want to know where it's going to go. I have no idea where it's going to go.
You know it's coming back.
Yeah, it's going to come back. It's like any of these movies that you see where it's like...
Yep.
And that's Fort Myers. They've got pictures of the TV of Fort Myers. That's getting the brunt of it right now. But we'll keep an eye out for you as we roll along this morning. Robert, you make a very good point on Twitter. Kentucky football has started a pipeline in recent years from Detroit high schools. I've heard that, actually. Not so much Detroit high school, but in that northern part. But you're probably right since you're closer to that area. But you're right. I do think that they have tapped into a lot of that upper Midwest area. Stoops has done a pretty good job with that. It's got to be. I hate to say this, but it's kind of difficult to recruit at Kentucky. I would think, right? It's if you've got some real talent in your SEC material, let me put it to you this way: if you're a kid that can go to an SEC school, you have a SEC level talent, right? If you go to Tennessee or Florida or Ole Miss, you're going to see how much they care about football, right? You're going to feel it the second you walk on campus. That's not to say Kentucky doesn't feel it. Of course they do. They got a nice stadium. My brother went to Kentucky. They don't ignore the football program. Right? They've had a number of years where they've been good. They've had their ups and downs. Tim Couch played there. He was a Kentucky kid. He played there. They've had a number of teams that were decent. And ranked in the top 25. They used to give South Carolina and Steve Spurrier problems all the time. But Stoops has really been building something, and you're right, he's been really building something over the years. But I got to think that it's still not the same atmosphere as Neyland Stadium on game day, right? It's still not the same feeling as Georgia and Athens or even Florida in the Swamp with 90,000 people. It's still different. But he's done a great job. Mark Stoops has done a great job there. But that they'll play Ole Miss coming up this weekend in a top 25 matchup. One other matchup that's I can't wait to see this on Saturday. Clemson and NC State. This is not only a matchup of two teams that are ranked in the top 25. These are two ACC teams that are ranked in the top 10. This is the kind of game. You know, we talk about these teams. I was talking about it earlier. Teams that can afford to lose a game and still be kicking around. Georgia can afford to lose a game, depending on who you lose to. Don't get me wrong. It depends on who you lose to. But you can make up for a loss if you're Alabama. You can make up for a loss if you're Georgia. If Georgia loses to Tennessee, for example, it may not hurt them in the end. But the ACC, it stinks that if you're Clemson and you're NC State, and it feels like if one of us is going to make the playoff and the other one isn't. Like, that's what this game is. And the same thing for some other teams down the road when they start meeting up with undefeated teams or ranked in the top 10 teams. It's like one of us is going, the other one ain't. And it's kind of too bad, but that's the way we still have it in college football. Speaking of which, John Clay is going to join us from Lexington next as we continue. Again on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We'll continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Visit them for a quote at progressive.com today. John Clay joins us, Lexington Herald leader, not only on Kentucky, but some other teams around the SEC. But the Wildcats rank 7th in the AP poll. They are 4-0, led by quarterback Will Levis, and they got a game coming up against Ole Miss this weekend. How are you, John?
I'm good.
Let's get the right. What is it's Will Levis? What else is working for Kentucky? How are they off to this 4-0 start?
Well, they played really good defense through the first, well, at least the first three games. The coaches were not real happy with the defense last week against Northern Illinois, but Northern Illinois has a pretty good offense. Plus, it was kind of a trap game for Kentucky before, as you mentioned, they go to Ole Miss this Saturday. But the defense, they shut out Youngstown State, which is an FCS school, but it was Kentucky's first shutout since 2009, their first home shutout since 1996. And they rank in the top, Kentucky right now ranks in the top 20 in total defense, scoring defense. They're, like, I don't have it in front of me, but they're real in the top five in third down defense. So, Mark Stoops with his defensive background, Brad White's done a good job as defensive coordinator. Really, the defense has carried him through the first four games.
All right, so Will Levis, he's been emerging now as a name in college football. I know he's been a name in Kentucky for a long time, but now the nation is starting to talk about him a little bit more. How has he developed in this role, and what are his attributes?
I mean, he's got the NFL traits. He's got the traits the NFL looks for. He's got a strong arm. He's a big, strong kid. He can also run the ball, though he's not run the ball much this year. They're trying to get him to stay more in the pocket. He's played in an NFL offense. Liam Cohen was their offensive coordinator last year. He came to UK from the Rams. He went back to the Rams, where he's the offensive coordinator there under Sean McVay this year. To replace Liam, Mark Stoops hired Rich Gangarello, who was the quarterback's coach with the 49ers. He had been offensive coordinator with the Broncos a couple of years ago. He runs basically the same offense. It comes out of that Mike Shanahan tree. Rich had worked for Kyle Shanahan for several years at different places. And Levis has fit real well into that offense. He's, like I said, he's got a real strong arm. Kind of a big difference this year. They've got some burners on the outside. He matched his career out 4 touchdown passes last week. One was a 70-yard touchdown pass. The other was a 69-yard touchdown pass. So he's got some good receivers to go with him as well. But the main thing that NFL scouts like about him is he looks and acts and plays like an NFL quarterback.
How has Mark Stoops done this over the years? He's always up for a big job, yet he stays in Lexington. How has he done that over the years?
I mean, he started out with his Ohio background. He was able to recruit very well in Ohio, getting kids to come down. Not the kids Ohio State was, Ohio State was getting, but there are a lot of really good players in Ohio who don't go to Ohio State or Cincinnati, and they were coming to Kentucky. He's built on that recruiting in Michigan. He's made a lot of inroads in Michigan. Now he's starting to make some inroads in the South. He's been able to develop guys. Go back to Josh Allen, who was a kid out of New Jersey. He was like a 2- or 3-star prospect, didn't have many offers. Stoops liked him, found him on tape, brought him here, turned him into the number 7 overall draft pick in the draft by the Jaguars. Same thing with Jamin Davis, who was picked in the first round by Washington last year. That's been, I think, the key. He's been able to evaluate talent, project that talent, and they've been able to produce for him. So I think it starts with that.
I know Chris Rodriguez is coming back from the suspension from what happened to him in May, but is that how much does he help the running game? Because Smoke seems to be doing pretty good.
Yeah, Smoke's doing okay, but Rodriguez he can break more tackles, and their offensive line has been a question mark through the first four games. They've done some shuffling. They have some new guys in there. I think Rodriguez, they've had a lot of negative yardage plays, way too many negative yardage plays, especially in the run game, and I think Rodriguez will help with that. Our big question is how rusty will he be going down to Ole Miss, since he has not played since last year, was suspended for the first four games. But he's a guy who ran for 1,370 yards last year, was a preseason All-SEC by both the media and the coaches coming into this year. So he'll definitely give them a boost.
All right, let's bounce around a little bit in the conference and what happened over the weekend with Florida and Tennessee. We're now starting to see really that Josh Heupel offense with Hendon Hooker running it. In terms of what has been working for what is about Tennessee and Josh Heupel in particular that has been working, especially in the SEC?
Well, like you said, I mean, he's got a real dynamic offense. He's got a really fast up-tempo offense. They run a lot of plays, not many time between plays. It's not the easiest offense to prepare for. Kentucky, they beat Kentucky last year up here 45-42. And I think part of that was because the Kentucky coaches had not seen that offense before or an offense like it. Plus, Heupel has a really good quarterback in Hendon Hooker, the transfer from Virginia Tech, who became the starter last year. He's a big, smart kid. He's almost perfect for that offense. So that was an impressive win against Florida, especially considering they did it without their best wide receiver in Cedric Tillman. Yeah. So that Kentucky-Tennessee game in a few weeks, that could be the game decides who's going to challenge Georgia in the East. We'll see.
What is Billy Napier arrives at Florida. He takes over for Dan Mullen. There's some talent there, but I always give the first-year coaches a little bit of a break. But Florida still is a dangerous team. But what did you see that with them in Gainesville? It looked like Kentucky had them pretty easily.
Yeah, they didn't. Florida, Anthony Richardson had the big game the week before against Utah when they upset Utah. He did not play as well against Kentucky. Kentucky did a good job containing him in the running game and made him throw, and he's just not a polished passer. I mean, Richardson's a big, strong kid who, like Levis, has a lot of the attributes the NFL is looking for, but he's not that consistent passer. I think Napier will do a good job at Florida, but it's going to take some time. I think one of the reasons Dan Mullen got the axe there was he was not recruiting well. He didn't recruit well the last couple of years. So they're not as deep as they've been before, and their receivers are not quite as good. I think that's part of their problem. I think Napier will get straightened out, but it's going to take him a little time.
All right. I know you may not have seen much of Georgia given your coverage of Kentucky, but there are people that are saying, hey, look, this Georgia team, despite what happened with Kent State, but they might even be better than last year. Are you buying that?
They could be. I mean, you know, it's hard to believe that you could say that considering all the guys they lost on defense. The defense was incredible last year, but they played, I think probably had a little letdown against Kent State. It's hard to keep up that kind of production the way the defense have played through the first 3 weeks, but they're really good. I think Stetson Bennett, obviously, he's got more experience. I think he's better at quarterback. I think they may have some better options at receiver. I think what a lot of that's based on that, hey, Georgia's better, is they're better offensively than they were last year. It's hard to argue with that through the first four games.
The bottom half of the AP Top 25 has got teams like Texas A&M, Arkansas, Ole Miss is ranked 14th. Any one of those teams right now you feeling kind of playing with fool's gold a little bit?
Well, that's a good question. I'm interested to see when Kentucky plays at Ole Miss on Saturday. Ole Miss, I mean, they're off to a 4-0 start. They've got an unbelievable running game going right now, which is a little different for Lane Kiffin. But they haven't played anybody. You know, Troy, Central Arkansas, Georgia Tech, Tulsa, their first four games. And they struggled with Tulsa in the second half, even though Tulsa was playing their backup quarterback. So I'll be interested to see what Ole Miss looks like on Saturday. I thought Texas A&M would bounce back, and they did against Arkansas, although I like both of those teams, and I still like Arkansas. I like their quarterback, Jefferson. I think Sam Pittman's doing a good job there.
South Carolina, I got to ask you about. I thought Spencer Rattler was going to come in and at least give South Carolina a viable quarterback. He worked with Shane Beamer before. They're not connecting. What do you make of what's going on in Columbia?
Well, you know, Rattler's kind of like the same guys we talked about earlier. He has the traits, he has the strong arm, he has the stuff the NFL's looking for, but he's not very consistent. And that's why he lost his job at Oklahoma. That's why he transferred to South Carolina, and you're kind of seeing the same things down there. It's a new offense for him. So even though he's working with Beamer, he's never worked with the offensive coordinator before. It may take him a little time, but I'm like you. I thought he'd be doing better I thought he would come in and make more of an impact right away than he has to this point, but we'll see how the rest of the season plays out.
All right. LSU started off with a loss to Florida State. They've still won four in a row. Brian Kelly figuring it out yet?
Yeah, I think he'll be fine. I think Brian Kelly will be fine. You know, he's working on that accent, getting that Cajun accent down. He'll be okay. He'll be okay. And Florida State, I mean, that was a tough loss to get your kick blocked at the end of the game after you made the big comeback. But get Brian Kelly. He'll be fine. He's won everywhere he's been. I expect he'll win at LSU.
I was thinking to myself, there's a lot of pressure to win at Notre Dame, and you do hear about it when you lose from people like around the world. But I got to think it's a little different when you lose an opening game to Florida State, and especially in the Superdome, when you hear about it in Baton Rouge.
Oh, yeah. LSU is unlike any other place. That's
without
for sure.
Question.
They take their football very seriously down there, and I think Brian's finding that out.
I always like to ask this question, especially about the Southeastern Conference, and I hope you kind of get where I'm getting at. We get the Alabama and we get the Georgias. We understand that. And here's a Kentucky and there's a Tennessee, and it's early in the season. How do you look at the middle of this conference? That's kind of where the meat of this conference is. That's the teams that will go to bowl games outside the playoff. They're the ones that the conference says, hey, look at what we've done at the end of the season. How do you grade the middle of this?
Well, kind of like the teams you were talking about, Arkansas, Texas A&M, teams like that. South Carolina, you know, I've done a lot of buzz about South Carolina going into this year. I don't think they've lived up to that quite as year. I'm not sure the middle of the conference and the lower end of the conference is quite as good as it maybe has been in past years. Missouri looks like they're struggling early on. Auburn, it's like they can't wait to get rid of Brian Harsin as
no
their coach.
Doubt.
They're just looking for a reason to get rid of him. So, yeah, I'm not sure. I'm kind of like you. I'm not sure that the middle and the lower end of the conference is quite as good as it's been in past years. But then, you know, when we get to the NFL draft, the SEC, I'm sure, will dominate again. You know, that's where the players go. There's more talent than anybody else. And then you're looking at Texas and Oklahoma coming in the next couple of years, at least by 2025. I mean, that's going to blow it up even more.
Can you give us an idea, and those of us who aren't in Lexington and just sort of know Kentucky from John Calipari and the basketball team, what the emergence of the football team, and they've had good years every now and then, they've popped up in the top 25 before, but what is it, what it's been like in Lexington with a really good top 10 football team now?
Well, I mean, there's always been a core following of Kentucky football who've suffered through, you know, years of mediocrity or even less than mediocrity. There's a lot of buzz. There was a lot of enthusiasm about this team coming into the year. You know, I wrote a column that really during the summer, I had more people ask me about what do you think about the football team than the basketball team. Of course, the basketball team was coming off the loss to St. Peter's in the NCAA tournament, and football, you know, season starts before basketball. But coming off of last year and with Will Levis coming back, the Citrus Bowl win last year, a 10-win season. There was a lot of optimism about this team, and there's still a lot. And that's continued through these first four games, especially the win at Florida. I think the win at Florida down there kind of stapled, okay, this team can be what we think it could before the season, we thought it could be. So that's really, you know, amped that enthusiasm up even more. But this Saturday's a big game. We'll learn a lot this Saturday against Ole Miss.
All right, John Clay again, Lexington Herald. Appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you for coming on. Hope we get you on again soon.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Love it. John Clay again, covering the SEC and obviously Kentucky athletics in Lexington. We'll come back. We'll wrap up this hour as we get ready for continue with Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. Thanks to John Clay in Lexington. I liked him. He was good. He's got that sort of southern charm voice, right? Like this sort of, it's all good. We'll talk over some biscuits and we'll talk some SEC football. I like that. That was good. Keeping an eye on Hurricane Ian, the water receding in Tampa Bay. And I was telling Ron this. I have no idea. I just retweeted this picture of the water receding in Tampa Bay, right? And I don't really, to be honest with you, I really don't know what that means because I feel like I've been influenced by Hollywood to think now a 500-foot wave of water is going to crash into the high-rise buildings of Tampa and just knock them down. Like,
yeah,
like Hollywood has a tendency to do that to me.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be that big.
No, right, exactly.
That big, but I have seen it before. Like, you know, when we had tsunami warnings when I lived in Hawaii and stuff. The water does recede. I've never seen it where all of a sudden exposes the bed.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You know, that just lets you know that storm is really whipping out there, and it's just bringing all the water because, you know, it's circling, it's pushing the water away, and then eventually it's going to bring it back around.
Like, and then, yeah, because Hollywood does this to me. I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I think that's the way it is, and it's not really the way it is. It's not really what actually happens. But you brought up Deep Impact. That's what I thought. That was my first thought. Deep Impact. The asteroid hits the water, and then all the water got sucked up, if you remember that movie, and then Taya Leone and her dad were on the beach, and crash.
Yep.
Done.
And dead.
And dead. And that's it. That's sort of the what I think. But somebody's been pointing out this is exactly what happened during Hurricane Irma. Yep. That the water just recedes and whatever, and then we'll see what it does. I just want people to be safe, man.
And like
I'm
you said,
people
like,
toughen this thing out.
And during the break, you're like, you know what? If that's the way to go.
That's the way to. Yeah, that's the.
No, if I'm a deep gonna, impact.
Yeah,
because it was probably so instantaneous.
It was probably instantaneous because the thing that scared me about those asteroids wasn't so much like dying. It was like. No food, no sunlight.
Yeah.
You know, like
walking
like
through a nuclear winter.
Walking through a nuclear winter, trying to scrounge up canned goods, fighting people off for food. Like, I'd rather just be on the beach like, hey, go ahead, asteroid. Come at me. I don't need this. But, you know, I'm not the walking dead type. Can I just make that clear? I'm just not the walking dead type. Like, look, I'm the kind of person, like, if the zombie apocalypse comes, I'm the guy you take because I'm a tasty meal. Like we're going to run to escape, but leave Tony behind because he can't catch up, and they'll feast on him for a few hours, and then we'll escape. And the other thing, too, is I'm not good at defending. Like, if I've got a can of, like canned pears and I'm eating them and you're going to come just take them away, I'm probably just going to let you do it. Like, I'm just too old to fight you.
Or would you be in a situation looking at a can of canned pears and going, I don't know how to open this.
Yeah, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, anybody have a can opener?
Does
no?
anybody have a, yeah. And they're like, here's a Bowie knife. And I'm like, yikes. I
here's
don't know
a
about
rock.
That. Yeah, I'll be opening up a can.
There's a rock and a twig.
So
open it, son.
I'm not eating mosquito pies or bugs. I'm just not the apocalypse type. That's not me. That's not me, but hey, stay safe, Florida. Seriously, I if you're in that area, Godspeed. I hope this passes and it doesn't appear to be as bad as it is.